Welcome to the Dojo, where we turn marketing news into marketing tasks. This week, we'll be taking three stories in terms of things that you can complete today to increase your marketing results. I'm Dale.
I'm Jess.
And there's no Tim this week, so welcome to the Dojo. And this week, we are actually joined by two guests to fill in a little Tim-sized gap. We're joined by Ali Newton, who is an absolute legend and commercial director at Exposure Ninja. Also joined by Carl Hughes, who's a senior content marketer at Exposure Ninja too. Ali and Carl, welcome to the Dojo.
Hello.
Ali, tell me, what's your relationship to marketing?
I love marketing because I think it's an exciting way to match people up with a business that can really help them, but also to help that business by getting them in with their audience. And I love the impact that you can have, particularly on like medium-sized businesses, where when they start to see that machine really working hard and feeding their sales team, really exciting stuff happens. And I love that.
Yeah, same. I love kind of like empowering people to do great things. Carl, I'd love to know, what's your relationship to marketing?
Mine's a bit of a love-hate relationship when it comes to marketing, which I know is probably a really bad thing to say, but I pretty much agree with you there, Ali. Being able to help people find the people that need them, the customers that need them and the services that need them, all of that is amazing. Helping businesses get to where they want to be, that's all great. But there's also the element that I do think SEO has maybe kind of broken the internet a bit, and I'll forever hate it a little bit for that. That's my relationship, love, hate.
Yeah, relatable. I get that. Well, as I say, we take a couple of stories and we turn them into tasks. So I'd love to know what the headline of your story is, Jess.
Headline of my story today is social media as a new search, meeting customers where they are.
Interesting. Search, one of my favorite topics.
One Ali, of Carl's what's your favorite topics.
And Ali, what's your story for this week?
Look, we effed up and getting honest in tough situations.
Intriguing. And Carl, your headline for this week?
The release and, well, the launch of Claude 3 yesterday.
Now, we do love a bit of AI in this podcast, but I think we're going to go with Ali's story for this week. So, Ali, who's effed up and well, how does that help in the marketing context?
The title is just irresistible, I think. this is from the CEO of Ace & Tate, Mark DeLong. And he was having an interview recently with the BBC and explaining that his advice to CEOs is to be honest if you make a mistake. And the headline's actually taken from a blog they released. It was a couple of years ago now, but they knew that they were going to miss their goals around net zero. So they decided to just come out with it, be really clear with their audience. And what I love about this is that they clearly know their audience really well. They knew they could go with a really strong, punchy headline. It's quite risky for some brands. You wouldn't go anywhere near this. Yeah. But they knew their audience. They went for it. And in that doc that they released, they were so clear about the targets they were going to miss, apologetic about doing so, but also explaining what they were going to do about it to actually make sure that they do hit them. And there's just such authenticity to that that I just loved it.
We were talking just recently about authenticity in branding, but do you think it's an opportunity that every brand can use, Jess? Can every brand kind of dive into that authenticness and be bold, or are there problems for some brands?
I really think that any brand can do it. It doesn't mean that you have to be, you know, swearing or be tongue in cheek, but there's always little things that you can lean into, whether it's, you know, you were started as a family business and you can lean into that, or, you know, there's always got to be some reason why you started your business. I mean, I guess there are some entrepreneurs who are just like, I want to be an entrepreneur and I'm going to start a business for the sake of it. But there are plenty of businesses that were started for a reason or have a vibe in their office or with their customers that they can actually play off of a little bit more in their marketing. And I think, you know, another example that's actually very similar, KFC had run out of chicken because they had a supplier issue and they did an advert that they posted loads of places, which was just a KFC bucket with like FCK on it, like to kind of be like, you know, play on their branding, but also be like, we messed up. and we're very, very aware of it, and it's really embarrassing. And I suppose for them, it couldn't really get much worse than running out of chicken when you're a chicken shop. So for them, they could kind of take that risk a little bit. But Ace and Tate, it definitely feels like a different situation there, where, you know, it actually potentially could get worse for them. And so they did take this risk. But the way that article is framed is very, very clever. And actually, I came away from it knowing more about their goals than I would have known before the mess up. So it was actually, you know, they really made the best of a bad situation in a super authentic way.
I love the fact that they've owned it, that they've just gone, okay, this could be a super negative story, or we could, you know, see how we can pull the positives in, that we're heading in the right direction and there are things that we can learn from it and do it better. But I think that comes from working on establishing your personality and who you're for over a long period of time. Like, you've done a lot of brand work over probably years for this kind of business, that people go, okay, it's very similar to what we expect from them. Like BrewDog, we talk about often, they have a character and personality that, okay, people are starting to wane on a little bit and start to get a bit tired with, but for a long period of time, people are like, okay, that's cool. That's what we kind of expect. But that is all built up over time, as I said. And Carl, I'm curious how we can communicate that brand personality and bring people in to love the brand, that brand affinity, through content. What kind of content can you work on? What kind of content marketing is possible?
I just want to go back a little bit. You mentioned accountability earlier as part of the authenticity element. And obviously, authenticity is now more important than ever. But I think that having a little bit of a focus on accountability as well, I think that's becoming more and more important, because consumers want the brands that they interact with and buy from. They want them to be accountable and they want them to be open. If you don't hit a target, like a sustainability target or whatever, just going, right, oh, we haven't done that right. These are the steps we're going to do. All of that can only be good, I think, and literally for any brand. I know there are some that are, you know, got a more professional tone of voice, but even then, accountability, I think, is more important than ever, and is only going to get more important. And you asked about the content version of that.
Yeah, like what kind of content can you do, or content marketing strategies would you recommend that helps you to put your personality and what differentiates you between your competitors out there? How do you make people aware that there is this brand that's just different and is more authentic?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of a really big strategy. I know we talk about AI, and I talk about AI a lot, but one of the things I'm talking about, writing about, and researching at the moment is humanizing AI content. Because if everybody just goes on ChatGPT or whatever, says, make me a blog post about this, then eventually there's going to get to the point where there's no difference between someone landing on your website and someone landing on your competitor's website. So you've got to have that. Nowadays, you have to have a unique standout personality, which obviously has to reflect your target audience. And even in companies where they've got the same target audience and the same or similar products, they still have to find a way to differentiate themselves. And that's where the content comes in. You target the specific audiences, discover their pain points and so on, and you build the content around that and your tone of voice.
That's a really interesting point about how you bring the human element into AI, because I was just reading on The Drum earlier today about a larger advertising company that owns multiple agencies, and how they've created a partnership with another company to bring in AI capabilities into their ad platform, into their, you know, how it all works. And my immediate thought was, that's great. It's going to kind of, you know, from an efficiencies point of view, that's going to really help to get more performance out of some advertising budgets and what have you. My fear factor is, how can you retain the creativity of you can create stuff with AI and it can be brilliant, but there's the nuance of like human understanding of empathy and various other elements that are a bit harder for even like the more recent releases of ChatGPT struggle with. And Jess, I know that you've often looked at how content creation, AI, human elements, personality, like how they work together. I'm curious, what would you recommend to people who are thinking about, I need more AI, because it just seems like the most, you know, sensible thing to do, but they're scared about the human element and just putting out generic stuff. What would you recommend?
Well, it's completely fine to use AI to help with content. I use it quite frequently, but it's then what you do with that. You wouldn't just take an encyclopedia of marketing knowledge or like of knowledge about your industry or business and then just upload that exactly as it's written, or take like a Wikipedia page about your industry and just upload that as it's written. You want it to apply to you and you want it to sound like you as well. You also, depending on your industry as well, you want to make sure everything's correct, because as much as AI has knowledge, it doesn't have that day-to-day human interaction that might make you understand that some specific terminology being used as frequently and stuff like that. So I think working in tandem with AI, editing the work, using it as a springboard and inspiration is a really, really great way to use it, because it will often give you stuff that just doesn't sound like you or isn't the way you would say something. But you can then use that if you're stuck on a paragraph or a sentence or even just getting started. You can use that to really, really speed up your workflow and get through those like lower motivation days. I mean, we're all human except for the AI. And sometimes we need that machine intervention to sort of help us out on the tough days. And I think that's exactly what it's perfect for.
Mm. Ali, do you see that there are issues in, just to bring it back to your story about honesty in marketing, honesty in tough situations with your headline, but do you think that companies need to be even more honest about how much AI they're using in their content production or in their advertising campaigns? Or do you think people are just going to accept it for what it is? Like, do you see an issue or a problem being created there?
I'm not sure. I think it depends. I've seen some brands really lean into it and they talk about it as part of the ad. But I think the novelty will begin to wear off at some point. And I also think that it's a tool and it's a great tool and it should be used to help, like you said, Jess, like when you're thinking of ideas or to sometimes speed up content. But I really can't see that you're ever going to get away without needing some human interference or whatever you want to call it, because you can just tell. It doesn't matter what the topic is. If it's pulled out purely and there's no editing, you can see it and feel it. And I think companies do need to be careful with that to just make sure that they're not getting themselves into a toneless, personalityless problem.
On that topic of making sure that people follow through on being honest and that everybody, if they're using tools or AI in their content production or not, what can marketing managers provide to their team or what kind of frameworks or playbooks or tools can they follow to ensure that they are retaining that honesty throughout their content creation or their marketing plans?
I think they need to know who they are as a business and to have that information in-house clearly and decided. And that needs to be very well informed and needs to include research from their customers, preferably some actual calls, talking to them about what they care about, what resonates with them, what they don't like. Some conversations with their team, lots of conversations with their team, lots of conversations within the leadership, and then trying to pull out the things that are the most important. And that can be really difficult because, of course, you'll get lots of different opinions. There'll be a lot of different information, but condensing that down into 3-4 sentences that really define what the company is all about, what it cares about, and what its mission is just absolutely essential. And for something like this, where something's gone wrong, it sounds like they probably had a little bit of time to figure out how they were going to deal with this and get ahead of it. But in some situations, these companies don't have any time. The news is going to break before they get there if they're not quick. So if you haven't done that groundwork, you're going to be too late. You're going to miss the boat and the story's going to be out without your input.
I'm going to hop us away from honesty and AI for just a second. Well, maybe honesty is still retained in this part, but Jess, I'd love to know more about your story. So remind us again, what's the headline for your story?
Yeah, so this is about social media as a new search engine, essentially. There was a HubSpot survey recently that surveyed some businesses, and 82% of businesses believe that brands will be found on social media much more than they will be found through traditional search. Now, I don't know whether this was more B2C or B2B, but I think at the same time, the people who are buying from B2Bs also spend time on social media. So they may come across your stuff. Like, I get adverts all the time for B2B products because they can see that my behavior online is also business related. And also 74% of organizations found that their customers, or they believe that their customers, are going to prefer to use social media for customer service in the upcoming year, which is very, very interesting. And me and Carl had a little bit of a chat just before we started recording about how both of us use Twitter, now called X, to publicly shame companies into, you know, listening to our complaints. Because quite often you'll have an issue and you'll go through, you know, you'll try and call and then they'll say, oh, the lines are busy, and then you'll email and you won't hear anything, and then you'll go to X, and then that is where you tend to get quite an immediate response, because when they realize that their brand name is on the line, then they're like, oh my goodness. So I think a lot of people have realized that. You know, I saw an artist say the other day, I always forget X exists until I need to complain to a company. And I did think that was quite funny. Another reason, other than the customer service element as well, is that so many social media platforms are making it so easy to shop in app. So I think people do go now on TikTok to buy things from TikTok shop. Like, they want to be on their feed and to be getting those like hyper targeted recommendations, which, I mean, we can talk about the ethics of that, et cetera, et cetera. But I know TikTok has been really successful with that. Instagram is starting to roll that out more. And I know on YouTube, I'm not sure if it's in YouTube Shorts, but I have noticed on more and more YouTube videos, they will have a little box in the bottom corner, which is like, you can buy our merch, or you can buy this, that, and the other. So we're definitely seeing this kind of social media shopping experience. Like I said, it is a bit of an ethical minefield to talk about. But if your audience are those kind of people who are wanting to see your products on social media and who are saying like, oh, I wish I could just buy this in TikTok and not have to go to another website, then there's real potential there. Or if you're seeing competitors have fantastic success on these platforms, then that's, you know, that's another element. And in terms of the physical searching, one thing that's very interesting about TikTok is often you'll be watching a video and at the bottom there'll be a search bar. To the point, it's kind of a meme, because sometimes the thing that's in the search bar is just so funny and you'll be like, wow, people were making a really, really hyper specific search about the person in the video or the situation they're talking about. And you'll often see the same thing if they've got, like, I don't know, some kind of product, then people will be searching, you know, such and such TikTok star's dress. And then you'll go on, you'll search that. And I have noticed search results are often quite poor when I've clicked on it, but I don't know how it is if you're more searching for products and stuff on there. And I do know that people are going on places like TikTok, even if they're like traveling, they'll go on TikTok and be like, top 10 places to visit in like Milan. And then they will do that because they can get that information in a 10-second video, and like in a more entertaining way. And I just think that is very, very interesting. It's not a shift that I've personally made, but I know that my younger siblings have made that shift and do use it quite frequently.
Yeah. I must admit, like in 2012, when I went backpacking, one of the first places I went to like look for places to visit or places to eat was Instagram. And we just hop onto the hashtags and we just put whatever city, food and whatever. And then we'd find like where all the locals were eating rather than our having to go to like TripAdvisor or these other websites. Carl, I'm curious like how you factor in social media into content creation within the work that you do. Is like something you consider? Are you thinking about the repurposing of content, or is it not really a factor? Like, how does it work for you?
It's not something I've done a lot or need to do a lot. I don't have a lot to do with social media full stop. I think the only social media I've got now is Reddit. I've just got rid of everything. I'm just the worst marketer in the world. I'm never online. but yeah, obviously, I think when you create a piece of content, no matter who it's for, you do have to have that in mind. That, you know, this can be shared. This has got value as a piece of work that can be used across multiple formats. And each one of those formats can be uniquely done, targeted to that platform and the users of that platform, which in turn, theoretically and hopefully, brings them back to the original piece of work that you did. which then obviously edges them into the full sales funnel and earns you a win in, you know, fingers crossed.
Do you find that are there any particular types of content that work really well for bringing in people, like through to business websites, whether that's B2B, B2C, e-com? Are there like typical types of posts that do well?
I think anything that's got information, an informational sort of intent, is always going to do a bit better than anything commercial. And I find that when it comes to social media updates, I think press releases don't have as much value because there's so much about this is what we're doing, even if it's for the customer specifically. Oh, we're doing a 50% discount on this. It still feels like, look at us, look at what we can do. We can give 50% off this. Whereas I think informational stuff, if you have a decent title and it's intriguing enough to the audience, you know, to your target, then inevitably you're going to get more clicks that take, you know, feed them through. That's my thinking.
Yeah, there is a kind of element of like who's in market and who's not. And I think definitely for people who are on social media, they're not necessarily in market right now. There's a lot more purchases which tend to be on the spur of the moment. I just happen to sort of see a post and I go, oh, well, that looks pretty cool. I might have a look at that. Oh, they've got other stuff as well. Now that item looks really, really cool. Okay, I'll bookmark that and I'll come back the next time I open Instagram or whatever. And oh, there's that thing again. It's in my stories now or it's elsewhere. Ali, I'm curious how, from a commercial perspective, how you would decide whether you spread yourself out. Do you take your marketplace, which is your website or your presence on, you know, on Amazon or elsewhere, whether you decide to spread yourself out and put your marketplace to be on Instagram and in social media as well, or do you go all in on one channel? What would you do?
I think it completely depends on the business and your audience and where they hang out. If they're hanging out there, then absolutely you're going to want to be there. If they don't, then I'd probably focus where they actually are. I'd also be tempted to test these things because we do sometimes find that there's a whole other audience you might never have imagined actually are interested in your product, and you might want to adjust your targeting slightly to be able to test those and see if there are other avenues you hadn't previously thought about. We had it a while ago with a sportswear brand where actually their audience ended up being completely different than what they had in their heads. And that can happen. So I'd suggest testing in lots of different places and looping back to what Carl was saying earlier about kind of informational content and things. This is a little rant from me. But when I'm on LinkedIn, some of the ads I get are just the most horrendous things that I've just ever seen. I am not going to buy software that costs thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds per year for a company based on a really awful advert. What I am likely to do is download this lovely ebook that you've presented to me that has got some really nice like stats in. Perhaps it's some sort of like industry report on how well we should be doing or not doing and what we're doing wrong. That plants that little seed of doubt in me that I might be doing something wrong. I'll download it. I'll keep an eye out. I'll see the emails coming through from them and eventually I will inquire. But going in with that rubbish advert to start with, it's not going to fly.
Yeah. And if you do feel like your marketing isn't quite going how you would like it to go and you want to see some upward direction for your marketing results, then go to exposureninja.com/review and request a free website and marketing review. And we'll send you a video that outlines exactly what you can do to improve your marketing and get those results you need to hit your growth goals for this year. Going to take us on to our next story, which is the launch of Claude 3. Tell us more, Carl.
Okay, so Claude has been out for a while now. It fell behind very quickly, OpenAI's ChatGPT-4. And I don't know, I assume everybody's had a play with Claude over the last year at some point. I was bouncing between GPT and Claude for about 6 months and gradually realized that I wasn't using Claude at all. But yesterday they announced the GPT-4 Buster. It's supposedly better than GPT-4 in every single way. GPT-4 is still currently the leader of the pack, but the stats all seem to indicate that the new version of Claude, which is Claude, there's three versions. There's Claude Opus, which is their most powerful one. Is that right? And then there's the others ones, which are Sonnet and Haiku. I haven't had a chance to play with these. At the moment, it's the same kind of price as GPT and what's the other one I've been using? Gemini. So it's about 20 quid a month. I was that disillusioned with Claude before that I'm really hesitant to pay another 20 quid a month to play with it again. But if it is that much better than GPT and Gemini, because I'm currently using those two more than any other tool. But apparently it does everything better. It doesn't do the chain of thought reasoning as much. It can do it in one hit. Bosh. It doesn't remember. It doesn't forget the context that you've given it as much as it used to, which was a real problem before. And probably the most enticing element is it's not going to do as many refusals. I'm sorry, I cannot do that. That's against our policy. And you're like, I was only asking you like what 2 + 2 was. That's not against anybody's policy. So I know lots of people are absolutely raving about Claude 3 already, but I'm going to hold back a little bit until I see a bit more value to it. Not that it's rubbish. I'm sure it's amazing, but I am wary.
That's fair enough and understandable given, you know, how much these things change and have done over the last, is it 18 months almost? I'm curious, does anybody here use Claude 2 or maybe using Claude 3 soon?
I use Claude 2, like most of the time. I was kind of, it's really interesting to me how different people prefer different AIs and whether, I don't know if it's just the little nuances of the way it speaks to you or the responses that you get or the way that you use it. I wonder if, because Carl, I see you as sort of an AI power user, maybe ChatGPT responds better to more advanced prompts. Whereas for me, I tend to use Claude on a very basic level, literally, because I don't necessarily want it. I'm not saying I don't want it to be good, but I want it to just give me a very baseline clinical answer so that I can then sort of add my own pizzazz to it, right? And I just think it's very, very fascinating how, you know, people say, oh, this Claude is the ChatGPT killer and ChatGPT is the Gemini killer. And actually, I think there's space for all of them. I think maybe different people like different, the ways that different things work. So if you're a business who's kind of like, oh my gosh, we love ChatGPT, but maybe we need to try Claude, definitely try it. But you haven't done anything wrong if you prefer GPT-4 or if you prefer Gemini, or if you prefer something totally different, like Perplexity or something. You know, it's all definitely to do with your own business goals. I mean, we know a lot about AI and we're always up for sort of chatting you through those kind of decisions and figuring out what works for you. So yeah, like Dale said, if you're interested in learning a bit more about AI and how it could impact your business, exposureninja.com/review.
I do wonder whether we need more personality from some of these tools. Like, I don't know if you've seen the film Her with Joaquin Phoenix, which is about somebody who has like a new operating system which has like AI built in, and they download it and they just so happen to fall in love with each other, this OS, this operating system, and the protagonist, I guess. But that AI, that operating system, has a personality. Like, they're friendly and, you know, that there's something there. I wouldn't mind if one of these chat tools had a personality and was like, you know, you can have a laugh and a joke with, and it just felt different from the other ones. I don't know, that would come into it for me. But we often hear about the content use, the marketing use for AI in our podcast, and anyone who's listened for a while has heard a lot about it. I'm curious about the kind of the commercial side of things. Like, Ali, I'd love to know if there are not commercial use in order to like make money, but like how it helps people in a commercial role or somebody who's trying to generate more revenue for their business, how you or people in your position might be using AI or could use it.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it depends on what you're trying to do. Like, when we say commercial, it's obviously quite a broad term, so it depends what kind of area you're focused on. The kind of main uses that I've seen for people who are kind of sales side is to help them put together some nice content for their pitches and proposals. There's some amazing presentation software out there that just like takes the thing, drops it all up and puts it into something that looks great. Some of them more reliable than others from what I've seen. And then obviously on the other side of things, there are some amazing tools around like Copilot where it can actually sit with you, integrate things. So you have, you know, it drafts up emails for you in response to things that come through. It remembers what contract they got sent and what terms they've got. It has all that information in there and can sit alongside you while you're working. So it is an amazing tool should we choose to use it correctly and actually leverage it well. And I think I'm still seeing some fear around it in some companies where, you know, there's fear that it's this kind of big technical mountain that needs to be climbed and there's a big sort of perceived barrier in the way. And like you said, Jess, there are different ways to use it and different tools that you can use and you can interact on whatever level it is that you want to do. And that could be some really complicated prompts that go down to the letter, or it could be that much broader one. I think what excites me, I haven't used Claude, I have to say, I'm a GPT girl, but I would be tempted to use this new version of Claude just because I've heard about the context window being so much bigger. And the context window is the bit that drives me crackers, because if it forgets that first thing and I've spent a long time trying to get this perfect thing out the end and it's forgotten the first prompt, oh, I just want to cry. Like, I can't put up with that at all. So context window, if it actually works as they said it would, then might have me there.
Excellent. Well, we need to pick a story that we can turn into marketing tasks. So which story? So we had, look, we effed up, honesty in tough situations, social media as the new search, which is very triggering thing, triggering headline for anyone who's ever worked in SEO, and the launch of Claude 3. What can I learn and what can I do today? That's a tricky one because these are all great stories. I'm going to pick the look we effed up one. And the reason is I think that there's some important lessons about marketing and marketing positioning. Congratulations, Ali. Positioning is super important to not only communicate to people why your business is better than others or a better choice, not necessarily, you know, but a better choice for your customers or your market. But also, yeah, just helps people to connect with you. And yeah, I think it's incredibly important, this personality branding. It gets better people through to you, better qualified leads, better qualified sales. So I'm going to pick that one. So Jess.
Hello? Yes, I'm waiting.
Hi, how are you doing? Jess. Jess, what tasks do you think marketing managers can take from this story and do today?
I think sort of having an idea in place in terms of like a little bit of crisis management. This wasn't necessarily crisis management full on, but it is a little bit of kind of a story that could have gotten sort of run away with by the media and taken quite poorly. So make sure that you've communicated with your team and you figured out what you might do. If you've got very public important goals that you might not hit, is definitely the first thing that I would do. And then in terms of the other part of the conversation we had about authenticity, review your content and see if there is anything that you can do to make it more authentic and make it actually tell your brand story more.
Yeah, I love that. Ali, would you mind stepping in for Tim this week and telling me what business owners can take from this story, what tasks they might be able to do?
Sure. So I think the first one here is to know where your red lines are around what matters the most to you. So here, Ace and Tate, you know, hats off to them. They knew that they've built this really cool eyewear brand all around being a responsible business. And it's their mission statement that they aim to be a more responsible business every day. So that's got to be a red line. If you know you're about to cross that, that has to be something that you protect at all costs. So if you're not sure what your red lines are, it potentially means your positioning is not strong enough in the first place. And it also potentially means you're not really quite on the same level as your customers. You might be falling into the trap of saying something like, what differentiates us is our customer service, which is something I hear from almost every single company I speak to every day. And so there might be a need to lean into that positioning a bit better and be ready so that you know what those red lines are. And if that's something you're struggling with, then absolutely visit exposureninja.com/review. And that is something that we can help you with. We have some fantastic services that help with exactly that.
Absolutely, we do. There's one extra one I'm going to suggest, which is a great suggestion from Ali that was given to me maybe 2 years ago now, which is we put together like a brand and marketing playbook, which just made like this central place where we all knew exactly what our positioning was, who we're for, how we sound. And that's a great thing to have in place because you can give it to literally anybody. You can, whether that's internal or external. So if you partner with an agency like us, because you want the best, obviously, so you can't be Exposure Ninja, but you can give that to us and we'll understand who you're for, how you sound, and there's no confusion over this is how authentic we are or not. Maybe we want to be a little bit cheeky. So yeah, I definitely recommend doing something like a brand or marketing playbook.
Yeah, that's something we've also done for quite a few brands already as well. Even quite well-established brands, we've been able to help them kind of go back in a good direction.
Right. Going to do a couple of quick-fire questions. And first up, Ali, it is you, my friend. I'm going to hit you with a question and I'd love to know. Be prepared, because here they come.
Okay. Consider me prepared.
If you had just 1 hour to work on your marketing, what would you work on?
Diving into AI and all things SG. So SG is coming and it's gonna hit the world hard. I think there are rumors that it's coming to Android, still optional, but globally to Android soon, which will just totally change how anyone on Android is using their phone. So SG and AI all the way.
I agreed 100%. What would you do with an infinite marketing budget?
Oh, every marketer's dream, that one, isn't it? I would be doing a bunch of things. I'd be making some lead gen books, like the How to Get to the Top of Google book that we have, but doing that for whatever company it was I was blessed with such a great budget for. The reason I do that is because they're great for lead gen, and if you stay on top of them, they can be pretty evergreen as well and keep providing lots of leads, but also lots of goodwill to the brand as well. I'd also be exploring working with some exciting influencers, just because I think if you've got that amount of budget available, that sounds like a very fun way to be spending your time. And I'd also be making some amazing content that's linked to off the back of questionnaires that get people to the right place and get them bought into the brand.
Love it. Which marketing skill would you recommend that the 18-year-old Ali worked on?
So when I first started in marketing, I did my CMI, Chartered Marketing Institute course, and it was great and taught me lots of theory, but it didn't teach me to ask for the sale. And if you don't ask for the sale, nothing is going to happen. So I wrote loads of great content. I, you know, produced a whole bunch of really nice stuff, but I wasn't saying, here's the next step. And the minute, you know, it was about 6 months in when someone said, hey, you might want to try that. And I did that. And the minute I did that, the machine started working. So this is something that is left out of the theory a lot of times. But if you don't ask and say what needs to happen next and why, you're not going to win.
Ali, what are you most excited about in marketing right now?
Oh, gosh. I'm going to go back to my normal answer of SGE. This has been the bandwagon I've been on for the last few months, and I am there because I think this is going to be a game changer. Do I think it's going to be released in its current form? No, I think it's going to be its bigger brother or sister, but I think when it hits, it's going to change things considerably for a lot of businesses.
100%. And Ali, who do you think we should invite onto our podcast as a guest next?
I was really torn here. I had two ideas. So the first one was Abby, because I just think the work that happens in content marketing department, but also in the email department is incredible. The amount of ROI we get off the back of our email marketing campaigns is ridiculous. And then I also had Gustavo, who I had Jesse say earlier, he'd been mentioned a couple of times now. Gustavo is amazing and he delivers our Brand Accelerator program, which helps businesses who need to figure out things like their positioning, what do they actually stand for, what do customers care about, and I think he's got some really great stuff to share.
We will do our very best to get both of them on very, very soon. But Carla, also, we don't normally have two guests on, so I'm going to take the opportunity to ask you these questions as well, because I love to learn about our guests and especially about the ninjas that work at Exposure Ninja. So, Carl, if you had just 1 hour to work on your marketing, what would you work on?
My answer is going to be so predictable, and everyone's going to say, Carl's going to say something about AI. Yeah, I am definitely going to. If you have never used AI before, pick a tool, doesn't matter which one, and just spend an hour on it and just talk to it, and you'll start to learn its flaws, its positives. You'll start to spot the repetitive patterns that it does, and then you'll realize that you start to see it when you're reading other content online, and you'll go, ah, wait a minute, I recognize that exact sentence structure. And then if you start using it in your work, you'll start to go, ah, I need to change all of that bit, because that's very clearly AI. That would be my 1 hour's work. Pick a tool and play with it.
Great use of it. What would you do with an infinite marketing budget?
Full multi-channel everything. I've seen how effective it works, and I would just go all out. I want email, PPC, I want social media ads. I just want everything, because when you've got like a single goal and everything is just going towards it, you would struggle to make it go wrong, I think.
Mm-mm. Which marketing skill would you recommend that the 18-year-old Carl worked on?
When I was 18, I don't think there was an internet. So I would just say writing. Everything comes back down to writing. If you can write a decent sentence or a decent paragraph, then you've got a way into, obviously, content writing, content marketing, designing PPC landing pages, writing emails. Read a lot, write a lot, and pick it up that way. That would be my advice to 18-year-old me.
Love that recommendation. What are you most excited about in marketing right now?
Tricky. I'd say AI, maybe, if I had to guess. I love it. I'm on it all the time. The other day, I took a photo of the food in my fridge and asked it to create me a meal plan for the next week. It's just amazing. And for work, it's changed my entire work process. And I've always enjoyed the creative element of this job, and I've found that with AI, I'm being more creative than ever, because I'm not spending as much time getting first drafts out. So I get to apply all the things I know and the witty turns of phrases that I think land. I can put them in where I want, and
And who would you recommend that we invite on as a podcast guest next?
I definitely second Gustavo. He is an absolute beast when it comes to content and branding. It's astonishing. But even Leah as well would be really useful. Natasha from the editorial team, I don't know if she's ever been on, but we mentioned something earlier about the accountability element. And I think because at Exposure Ninja, we've got an actual dedicated editorial team. I've never worked for a digital marketing agency that has one of those. The editor was always my manager or someone who'd have, 100 pieces of work. They'd skim through, make sure the anchor text was in the right place, and then go, yeah, I'm sure that's fine. But having a dedicated editorial team is phenomenal, and I'd love to get more insights about how they do what they do to help us.
That's a great suggestion. Really appreciate that one. Well, thank you everyone for joining us, and thank you both for coming in and fitting in for Tim. I think we've had an upgrade there, but don't tell Tim. if you enjoyed this week's dojo, please do leave us a review over on your favorite podcast app. If that's iTunes, if it's still called iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify, let us know what you think of the dojo and what you'd like to hear more of. If there's anyone you'd like us to invite in, we do check those reviews, so it would be great to see yours come through too. And then join us again next week for the next episode of the dojo. Thanks, and see you then. Bye.